as a serious mistake, as a hurtful and bad thing. Coming Home, Apocalypse Now, Full Metal Jacket, Platoon, and probably others, but those are the ones that I have either seen or have read about extensively. They've portrayed the war in this particular way. And one of the more unifying themes in all of these movies is there's always a scene where somebody snaps, where some grunt, some piece of cannon fodder, or they're too young, too inexperienced commanding officers, which was sort of a joke in those days, snaps and goes off into a killing frenzy, as in My Lai, which is the only one that we happen to hear about. And once that hit the fan, that was no fun at all. So I've seen this commonality in these films. And one thing that I really believe and I have really thought about is that women would not do that. Women would, with all the pressure and all the torture, I'm trying very hard, and I think I do sort of understand where the men were coming from when they did these atrocities, when they killed women and children and spitted babies on their bayonets and did miserable, horrible things that they probably were unable to live with. They're probably in rubber rooms right now, too. But I don't think that women could do that. We, as a sex, I'm speaking very generally, could conceivably, and I know I could, kill someone, one person, one-on-one, who is threatening me or threatening a child of mine or someone I loved. And I have to love them a lot because I believe that people should basically be able to take care of themselves. But I would not think that under that kind of pressure, even under that kind of pressure, that we would go off and kill and kill and kill and kill and kill until we just dropped over dead or dropped over exhausted, that we don't go on automatic pilot when it comes to killing. Maybe we do as far as coping is concerned. We've got great coping mechanisms, but not killing mechanisms. And there, I think, is a great difference between men and women. Isn't that interesting? The other thing is that another point to bring up is the, well, first of all, let me preface it by the fact that I live in a small town in New Jersey. I don't know the population, but it's tiny. You can walk from one end to the other of it, okay? And there are actually sidewalks all the way through, which is great. You don't have to walk on the shoulder of a highway. But this town and the surrounding towns, because we do go driving various places for groceries and videos and whatever, has an abundant display of patriotism going on here. They have American flags. I have never seen such huge American flags in my life outside of on very tall public buildings. They have them draped over one family and two family houses. It practically covers the house. That's a pretty obvious symbol. The American flag means my country, right or wrong. Oh, I'm presuming, but I'm presuming it means that. My country, right or wrong. We're over there. We have to protect our oil. It's not ours. But, you know, it's that way of thinking. And one of the sad mistakes I was listening to one of the talk stations, the AM talk stations. One of the ones that has an actual morning show that I can stomach to get up to with my clock radio. They made a fatal mistake when the war was starting. They opened their phones to the, quote, man in the street, unquote. And the backward logic that they were getting on people's feelings about the war was incredible. People were actually saying over the air that we're going over there to fight to fight for our freedom. Very skewed logic. When you boil down the meaning of war, that's what it's supposed to mean. You are fighting because you have been attacked, and you are fighting for your freedom. Unfortunately, that is very rarely the case these days. War used to be a much simpler mechanism. It used to be a country invaded another country, country A invades country B goes, you can't do that, and smacks country A around. It don't work like that no more. Because we are divided into the first, the second, and the third world. We only ever seem to talk about the third world. The first world, of course, is us, U.S., right? The USA. The second world, which I've never heard it referred to this way, is Russia, the other superpower. And the third world is everybody else. So in these days of very complicated political alliances and natural resources which are disappearing as we speak, and the mechanization, mechanization of our society, the dependence upon oil and gas has really skewed things around an awful lot and taken war into a whole new perspective. Also, the advent of weapons that you push a button and 50,000 or more people's lives are just not there anymore. And you're way somewhere else. They have depersonalized the act of murder, the act of killing. They've made it sanitary and very easy, very simple. It's a video game now. You put your thumb on a joystick. You move the joystick around and you press the button. And you're watching a digital or a video readout of what's going on. You can't see it. You can't hear it, and you certainly can't feel it. That scares me to death. In the old days, we're talking in the medieval times, you either shot an arrow physically, you came up against somebody with a knife or a sword or an axe, you got their blood on you. You got their guts all over you. It was disgusting. Killing, that was the only way to do it. Now, we're about to start, or have started, I mercifully do not partake of much media these days, so I don't know whether or not we have or have not started the ground war, the ground operations in the Middle East. But I believe that these children, these young people who were raised on video games, are going to find that ground combat is a lot different than the rocket jockeys up in the plains. And they're going to get tired of it a lot faster. And they're going to get sick of it a lot faster. Literally sick, I believe. Because they're going to have to face these people. and they're going to see it real close. They're going to get a ringside seat to what to their actions, and it's not going to be nice. So here I am going off again. I was talking about yellow ribbons and American flags. How I got into this, I'll never know. The other thing that we've, that there, the houses are bedecked in, besides the grand old red, white, and blue, are yellow ribbons. And many times they're together. There's a yellow bow and two little flags sticking out of it. And when I started seeing this stuff, when it started appearing all over my neighborhood, can't miss it, can't get away from it, every telephone pole, every light pole, every bus stop, every car antenna, every house, everything is wearing either yellow ribbons or American flags or both. And I started to think about the symbolism of the yellow ribbon. I mean, the old glory, it's pretty obvious. But the yellow ribbon, to me, always meant, because of the Tony Orlando and Dawn song back in 1970, whatever, it always meant, I love you, please come home. And the American flag is saying, well, we're over there because they're fighting for our freedom, and we got to stay over there and get it done and vanquish those Arabs and all that. So I'm seeing the two of these together going, I don't think people are getting this. And at first, okay, there were hostages. It made more sense then. Hostages, I love you, please come home, tie the yellow ribbon, that made sense. But then the hostages were freed, and I thought, okay, now all the yellow ribbons are going to come down and all the flags are going to go up. But no, they're still there together. And it was very odd. So last Sunday, I'm perusing the Times, which is the only day I get it, and I find on the front page an article which was written by a woman. Not that that really means anything, but it might be something that only we think about. I don't know. And it was about the confusion and the varied meanings of the yellow ribbon. So I'm going to read it and share it with all you. It's called War's Ribbons Are Yellow with Meanings of Many Hues by Alessandra Stanley, and it was in last Sunday's Times. Sybil Roberts, whose nephew is in the Persian Gulf, was so angered by anti-war protesters at her door carrying petitions that she wrapped the columns of the porch of her Houston row house with yellow satin, buried the facade under 14 giant yellow bows, and planted a sign in her lawn that read, "We support our troops," on one side, and "Down with protesting," on the other. Trish Hsu wears a yellow ribbon pinned to her blouse whenever she attends an anti-war rally. A volunteer at the Manhattan branch of the Military Families Support Network, Ms. Hsu has an uncle and a brother in the Persian Gulf, is vehemently opposed to the war, and says she shares Mrs. Roberts' emotional attachment to yellow satin. "You can oppose the policy," Ms. Hsu says, "and still support the troops." Yellow ribbons wrapped around trees, telephone poles, satellite dishes, pinned to lapels, or fluttering from car radio antennas, mailboxes, and shopping carts have blossomed into a national reminder of combat in the Gulf. All around the country, neighborhoods and entire towns have smothered themselves in yellow ribbons, looking a little like captives of the rap artist Christo. That's rap with a W, by the way. But the symbol is ambiguous, flaunted with equal fervor by supporters and opponents of the war. The yellow ribbon, inspired by a 1973 song and popularized during the Iran hostage crisis that ended in January 1981, has become a patriotic homage to the soldiers themselves, a way of sheltering the warriors from controversy about the war. "We were looking for a way to support the kids and let them know we're thinking of them," said Barbara Cohn, who with a friend has so far wrapped almost every tree and 150 houses in Caroline, New York, a community of 3,500 people. Excuse me while I rattle my Times. Oh, God, that's loud. Wrong side. After the stores ran out of ribbon, she resorted to fluorescent yellow surveyor's tape. I didn't want us to get into the blame the soldiers problem that happened during Vietnam, she said. If there is a unifying thread to the country's conflicting sentiments about the war in the Gulf, it is a conviction that this generation of soldiers should not be treated as shabbily as were the combatants in Vietnam. The yellow ribbon is their promissory note. My brother was concerned that coming home would be bad like Vietnam again, Ms. Xu noted. I said, under no circumstances. The Vietnam vets who frequent Baedeker Park, a seedy half-block of park benches in San Francisco's Tenderloin District, have adorned trees and a fence with dozens of giant yellow bows made from the only available fabric, yellow police tape with Do Not Cross printed on it. 70% to 80% of us are black down here, and we can't help but support the troops because 32% of the army is black, said a park denizen, who said he was a Vietnam veteran but declined to give his name. I know what it means to lose a war, he said, and I don't want it. But once it's started, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure it ain't lost. The yellow ribbon is viewed by most people as patriotic, not political. Las Vegas casinos have draped yellow ribbons over their neon signs. Lorillard Inc. is adding yellow ribbon stripes to the upper corners of magazine ads for Kent, Newport, and True cigarettes. And Everson Walls, a defensive back for the New York Giants, defied National Football League regulations and wore a yellow wristband in the Super Bowl. The yellow ribbon has become so apolitical and ubiquitous a symbol that some feel they need to attach it to a more pointed message. In Concord, California, a tattoo artist is busy applying peace symbols topped by yellow bows. Members of the Vietnam Veterans of America have taken to wearing orange ribbons as a reminder of the damaging effects of Agent Orange, a defoliant sprayed in Vietnam, as well as a warning about the prospect of chemical warfare in the Gulf. To David Klein, a New Jersey organizer of Vietnam Veterans Against the War, the orange ribbon symbolizes that the war is senseless and unnecessary. It carries the opposite meaning to another Vietnam veteran, Mrs. Cohn's husband, Wilson, who wears an orange ribbon next to his yellow one. He says his only regret about the Persian Gulf War was that it did not begin sooner. Sales of American flags and American Eagle emblems have also soared, and shortages of yellow and orange ribbon have driven people to improvising with home-dyed twine, engineer's tape, and in at least one case in New Waverly, Texas, a folded yellow plastic tablecloth. C.M. Ofray and Sons, a giant ribbon manufacturing company with headquarters in Chester, New Jersey, has shipped 30 million yards of yellow ribbon, a tenfold increase over last year. The company is on a six-day work week and 24-hour operations to keep up with demand. Yellow ribbons were used widely during the Iranian hostage crisis, but the practice was first adopted to welcome the returning prisoners from Vietnam. Inspired by the 1973 love song by Tony Orlando and Dawn, "Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree," about a returning convict. The song, according to one of its writers, L. Russell Brown of Cedar Grove, New Jersey, was based on a story he had heard about a woman who tied a yellow handkerchief to welcome her lover back from the Civil War. There are historians who cavil about the exact origins of the legend. Some point to the fact that yellow was the color of the United States cavalry. Others cite a World War I folk song entitled "For Her Love Who Was Far Away," which was used in a John Wayne cavalry movie. She wore a yellow ribbon. In any case, it was the sentimental pop tune that brought the yellow ribbon to its current pitch of patriotism. Mr. Orlando, who keeps a yellow ribbon tied to the antenna of his Mercedes in Los Angeles and wears a yellow silk sash on the lapel of his tuxedo when he performs, said, "I feel very proud. All I did was record the song. The American people turned it into an anthem of freedom." There are those who find the yellow ribbon inappropriate. "To me, it stands for hostages," says Undia Foltz of Puyallup, Washington, who said she created the yellow symbol for the Iranian hostages after hearing Mr. Orlando's song on the radio in 1980. Mrs. Foltz is currently leading a Flags Across America movement to support the troops. A flag is more patriotic to servicemen, she said. But Penny Langan, whose husband Bruce was a hostage in Iran and is more widely credited with popularizing the yellow ribbon, disagreed. She has kept a ribbon on her front lawn in Bethesda, Maryland for 6 years to honor the Beirut hostages. It is now weathered and gray. She recently added a fresh yellow ribbon for her two sons who are serving in the Gulf. To me, it's just a symbol of caring, she said, of standing by our people and waiting patiently. That's it. That's very well-researched article. I mean, going back to the writers of the song, going back to Tony Orlando himself, praise be, he's still alive, and performing, and asking a bunch of people. Very well done. Alessandra Stanley from the New York Times. And it doesn't say special to the New York Times, so I guess she's, like, on staff somewhere. So that is... That's some more indication that I'm not the only one out there who's confused about yellow ribbons. And to make matters even more interesting, as I was up in my attic today digging out my record collection, my women's record collection, which is rather extensive, I found a record of martial music, military music. One of the selections is called The March of the Women Marines. So, since we are talking about women, and we'll be talking about women in the armed forces, let's hear it.
Last night I had a lovely dream. I saw a big parade with ticker tape galore, and men were marching there the like I'd never seen before. Oh, the bankers and the diplomats are going in the army. Oh, happy day, I'd give my pay to see them on parade, with their paunches at attention and their striped pants at ease. They've gotten patriotic and they're going overseas. We'll have to do the best we can and bravely carry on, and we'll just keep the laddies here to manage while they're gone. Oh, oh, we hate to see them go, the gentlemen of distinction in the army. Oh, oh, we hate to see them go, the gentlemen of distinction in the army. The bankers and the diplomats are going in the army. It seems a shame to keep them from the wars they love to plan. We're all of us contented that they'll fight a dandy war. They don't need propaganda, they know what they're fighting for. They'll march along with dignity and in the best of form. And we'll just keep the laddies here to keep the lassies warm. Oh, oh, we hate to see them go, the gentlemen of distinction in the army. Oh, oh, we hate to see them go, the gentlemen of distinction in the army. The bankers and the diplomats are going in the army. We'll have to make things easy, 'cause it's all so new and strange. We'll give them silver shovels when they have to dig a hole, and they can sing in harmony when answering the roll. They'll eat their OK rations from a hand-embroidered box, and when they die, we'll bring them home and bury them in Fort Knox. Oh, oh, we hate to see them go, the gentlemen of distinction in the army. Oh, oh, we hate to see him go, the gentlemen of distinction in the army.
Looking over.